So, okay, we're going to begin then with today's lesson, today's message. And I want to just begin by reviewing our seven C's together. We come together as a compassionate, courageous, contemplative, collaborative, connected community. I'm trying to get Hope's attention, so we need to be seated. We're good. Welcome. So I'm going to start with a story today, okay? Once there was a king who held a contest to see which artist could paint the best picture of peace. The king carefully considered the many entries, and in the end, he found two that he really liked. One was a picture of a calm lake, perfectly mirroring the majestic towering mountains surrounding it. Overhead was a blue sky with fluffy white clouds. Everyone who saw that picture agreed it was the perfect representation of peace. The other picture had mountains in it also, but these were rugged and bare, with a ferocious foaming waterfall charging down on the rocks. And above was an angry sky filled with heavy rains and flashing lightning. This picture, everyone said, looked nothing like peace. But when the king took a closer look, he saw that behind the angry-looking waterfall, a tiny bush had grown right up in the rock. And on that bush, a mother bird had built her nest. There, in the midst of the rushing, angry water, sat the bird, a picture of perfect peace. The king chose the second picture because he knew that peace does not mean being in a place where there is no noise, turmoil, or trouble. Peace means being in the midst of these things and still feeling the security and serenity in your heart. A timely message for us today, is it not? And so in their respective books that we've been looking at the last couple of weeks, The Eye of the Storm, Embracing Conflict, Creating Peace, and The Eye of the Storm for Teens, Finding Peace in the Midst of Conflict, Uni ministers Gary and Jane Simmons use the metaphor, the eye of the storm, to describe our spiritual center where we always find that perfect peace. And by the way, in terms of Jane's book, a couple of people asked me last week if it would be a good gift for teenage grandchildren or children, and I said yes, but I'll tell you what, the book is not just for teens. She is able to take all of the concepts in Gary's book and just make them so beautifully, just explains them really well, like a good teacher does, and it's full of stories and things that we all like, not just teens. So I really do recommend that book. So, let's see. Reverend Gary says in his book, at the center of the hurricane is its eye, a single point in space where the forces of the storm are in perfect equilibrium, a place of absolute stillness. The eye of the storm, in other words, is our Christ center, our spiritual essence. And at the circumference of the storm, all around us, the winds of confusion, misunderstanding, blame, the need to be right, can blow with devastating ferocity. But at the center, there is only wholeness. As spiritual beings having a human experience, we can navigate all the conflicts from our outer lives, from our spiritual center, where there's never fear, there's never distress. There's only wholeness, divine love, power, and peace. Jesus models this for us in a familiar story, almost everybody knows, set on the Sea of Galilee, and it's told in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all three synoptic Gospels. After he's been teaching the multitudes all day, Jesus says to the disciples, "Let's go to the other side," meaning the other side of the sea. So they cross the sea in a small boat, and Jesus falls asleep in the stern, his head on a cushion. According to Mark, here's his description, a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already swamped. The disciples panic and wake Jesus up, saying to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Jesus rebukes the wind and says to the sea, words from the Old Testament, from the Hebrew Bible, "Peace, be still. The wind ceases and the sea calms. Then Jesus rebukes the disciples, saying, "Why are you afraid, you of little faith?" Well, in terms of the disciples' fear, Bible scholar Ed Townley notes that this event occurs very early in Jesus' ministry. His reputation is beginning to grow, and he is beginning to draw large crowds. But at this point, even his disciples don't really get it. In some ways, they never got it, but they certainly didn't get it here. They don't fully understand the Christ power that Jesus is talking about and demonstrating. The disciples represent human consciousness, and I think we can all relate at this moment in time about how easy it is to fall into fear and discord, can we not? So in calming the sea, the storm, Jesus looks beyond the stormy circumstances of life to a greater reality, showing the disciples and us that the power of God through the Christ within is absolutely unlimited. When he affirms, "Peace, be still," peace immediately manifests in the outer world. That's something that we need to remember too. Now, I know we don't normally think of Jesus as asleep on the job, do we? But he was asleep in this moment, and probably because he was exhausted after a day of teaching the multitudes. I can identify with that. His sleeping is evidence, though, that through Christ consciousness, Jesus is unaffected by the storms of the outer world. Reverend Townley helps us find a deeper significance in this part of the story. He says, "That same Christ power in Jesus lives in every single one of us, but it doesn't take charge of our lives. It lies peacefully asleep, ready for us to call upon and awaken it." But too often in our human skins, we tend to work ourselves up into a state of high anxiety instead of calling upon the Christ of our being. When our faith in the Christ is greater than our fear of outer storms and drama, we can immediately turn within and align with the wholeness and Christ power that we are. And from our wholeness, we see situations and other people more clearly. Reverend Jane writes, "Storms don't just happen by accident. A hurricane needs certain conditions, such as temperature, wind velocity, and humidity, in order to rise up. In the same way, certain conditions in our lives can cause storms of conflict to arise for us." Now, please understand here that we're not saying that we cause all the conflicts in the outer world. That's really metaphysical malpractice to think of it that way. Certainly, our thoughts have creative power, and we do tend to attract ourselves to that upon which we focus. However, as Unity Minister Eric Butterworth famously said, we cannot control everything that happens around us. We cannot control everything that happens to us, but we can always control what happens where? Within us. That's exactly right. So Jane and Gary explore what they call winds of conflict, certain conditions in our consciousness that create discord. The first wind of conflict is something we talked about last week. It is a consciousness of separation. There is a saying that I really like, and the saying is, "If God seems far away, guess who moved?" So here's the question, and this is a really compelling question for all of us. If we are whole and complete, then why don't we know it and feel it every single moment of our lives? Reverend Jane tells a story from Tuesdays with Maury about a small wave that is happily rolling along in the ocean. Suddenly, he notices that the waves in front of him are crashing against the shore. He becomes terrified, cries out, and tries to warn all the other waves. "Look out," he says, "we're all going to crash." Another wave calmly says to him, "Relax, you are safe. You're not just a wave in the ocean, you are part of the whole ocean." And just as a wave can never be separate from the ocean, you and I and all of humankind can never be separate from the presence of God. Life is all one. There is no separation except in our own consciousness, in our own minds. Reverend Jane says, we enter the world with an unconscious innocence, knowing our oneness. If you ever held a baby in your arms, you know that's true. Babies are just trusting and loving and can feel their oneness. However, as we grow up, we find that life does not always go the way we think it should, and we develop error judgments about ourselves. Throughout childhood, most of us were not told that we were children of God, created whole and free. If you were told that as a child, you're really lucky. I wasn't told that as a child. Reverend Jane says, it's not really what happens to us that causes us to develop this consciousness of separation. It's the beliefs we develop about ourselves because of what happens to us that get in our way. We end up spending our entire lives wearing masks to cover up our false beliefs. Now, at this point, I think we all know how uncomfortable it is to wear a mask, right? Not very comfortable. But the thing is, we are willing to show to the world only those parts of ourselves that we think are acceptable, but the parts that we deem unacceptable don't go away. They lie hidden and buried and are known as the shadow, and we all have our shadow work to do. Reverend Jane writes, this is like holding a beach ball underwater. It takes a lot of energy to keep it down, and eventually, no matter how long you try to hold it underwater, the ball is going to pop up somewhere, and I would add, sometimes when we least expect it. So these hidden negative beliefs are not products of our heart, our Christ center. They are products of our head, our intellect. And when they cause us to act out, we are not showing up in the world as we truly are. As we said last week, other people can reveal, mirror for us where we are not connected to our wholeness. We are all whole and free, every single one of us. There's nothing we can ever do or fail to do to change that, but we don't really grasp it in our own consciousness. And what is revealed can be healed. We always have a new choice. We can let go of those beliefs that make us feel small, insignificant, and unworthy. We can transform any situation, just as Jesus did in the boat, by choosing to see it clearly. Instead of listening to that self-judgment tape in our heads, we can go to our hearts and see ourselves from spiritual perspective. When we awaken to our true identity, we see every experience and every person clearly, and that is important. And what is our true identity? Well, the Sufi creation story tells it like this. In the beginning of time, the Creator wanted to behold the beauty of creation, and so a mirror was fashioned. As the mirror was held up to the Creator's face, so great was the light, power, and beauty of that image that the mirror shattered into billions of bright, shiny pieces of every size, shape, color, and description. Thus were the people of the world created. Reflections of spirit, all unique facets of the one. So the story beautifully exemplifies that we are all reflections of one spirit. Reverend Jane advises, whenever you find yourself lost in feelings of unworthiness, ask your heart these questions. How can this be possible? How can I possibly be unworthy or unlovable if I am a reflection of the one? And the second question is, what is the truth about this situation? The truth that sets us free, is that there's only one presence and one power in the universe, and we are all one unique divine expression of that one presence. So knowing this, we see clearly, we experience oneness through communion. Communion means common unity, Common union, it means unity, being connected to all life. Communion is the eye of the storm. Reverend Jane says, the first step of wholeness is seeing the distinction between you and your experience. She invites us to look at our hands. Would everybody do that? Just look at your hands, okay? Look at your hands. You have hands, but guess what? You are not your hands, are you? You're more than that, right? In the same way, you are not your experiences. You are not your thoughts. You are not your feelings. You certainly are not what other people tell you you are. If we judge our self-worth according to our experiences, we are looking for our wholeness in all the wrong places. When we are not connected to our wholeness, then when somebody judges us, we will react by trying to defend ourselves. Well, all right, let's see, where was I? I know. Then when somebody judges us, if we're not considering ourselves whole, we react by trying to defend or disprove the accusation. Just think of the last time you were judged. I mean, sometimes we do that. We start arguing, explaining, and defending. And if we do that, we miss the opportunity to create communion and connection. So do think for a minute of that last time when you were judged by someone, and how did it feel? Feels pretty yucky, doesn't it? You feel like you're not listened to, you're not understood. Jane says, I want to let you in on a very important secret, one that can help you overcome judgments. Now, I'm not sure, personally, if this is really a secret. I think we all know it. But it's something that we cannot hear often enough. It is, a judgment is never about you. I'm going to say that again. A judgment is never about you. It might be about something you said or did, and that is something you can consider and think about. However, it is always about what the other person needs. It may be about what is missing for them in your relationship. In fact, it is for you because through you, you can discover where you are not connected to your self-worth. For example, if someone came up to me and said, Jan, you're a slacker, you don't work hard enough, I most likely would let that just roll right off me because I know it's not true. I overwork to a fault, okay? So I'm not gonna accept that about myself. However, well, Jane has a cute little saying for this. She says, those kind of judgments pass through us like a breeze through a screen door. They just pass through and we don't grab hold of them. However, if someone said to me, Jan, you are a lousy minister, because ministry is important to me, and this, you know, it's my life's work right now. Just for a moment, I might allow that to trigger residual fears of my not being good enough, and we all have those once in a while. No screen this time. I would catch that second statement, get defensive, and ironically, what would happen? I would let it affect my performance. You know, I would make it true, wouldn't I, by holding it in my head. Because if I catch it, it is about me, and it's something for me to look at and learn from. We can become aware of our healing needs as we watch our own reflections to others' judgments. And what valuable information is that for us to discover those hidden, faulty beliefs? Reverend Jane writes, judgment is the package, but you have to be willing to accept the gift. The gift is awareness and growth. And if we don't buy into those judgments, then we have wonderful opportunities for connection and communion. For example, if someone tells me I'm a lousy minister, I can realize it's not the truth of me, and that it's about something missing for the other person. And this understanding allows me to listen from the heart and get to the real issue. Now, maybe it's something I can fix and maybe it isn't, but at least I know what's beneath the comment. And Jane gives us three magic words to say when someone criticizes or judges us. Three magic words. Anybody want to guess what they are? No? Okay, well, they are, I bet some of you said this before, tell me more. tell me more. Or sometimes I'll say to people, would you like to say more about that? Or would you tell me more about that? If somebody lashes out at you, and tell me more is a formula to lovingly and peacefully deal with judgments in a healing way. We have to be in the right consciousness to do that, obviously. After the other person has elaborated on the issue, our next question can be, well, what is it that you need? Or what seems to be missing here for you? In my case, like, what would I have to do for you to think I'm not a lousy minister? You know, that sort of thing. Now, this process does not mean that you never get a chance to respond, to say how you feel about the situation. After you've heard, really heard, the other person, you can say, now that I've heard you and you feel understood, I'd like to share what's missing in this for me. And then you passionately, compassionately share it. It also doesn't mean that you have to reach agreement. Maybe you never will. You just have to be willing to come from your own wholeness and make a connection with the other person. This is called nonviolent, I like to call it compassionate, conversation. It is listening and speaking from the heart, and that's the gateway to true healing and authentic connection. The Chinese verb for listen, there's a quick review of the lesson. The Chinese verb for listen is composed of characters of heart, eyes, and ear, meaning to give undivided attention and become fully present to one another. Moving the conversation from our heads to our hearts, we feel connected. We experience our oneness, and peace and love are there, and they are a connecting link between God and the person and the situation. This is how we can be who we've really come on this earth to be. The peace and love we are always wins, always.